Welcome to the official Scottish Rugby podcast. This week we will be discussing Edinburgh's semi-final loss from the weekend and looking ahead to their quarter-final against Bordeaux and also a look ahead towards the Autumns.
Rach, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
We can't get too stuck into this yet because Mossy's away answering his doorbell. That's how busy the man is.
It's just non-stop.
Did you watch the game at the weekend?
I did indeed, yeah. It was one of the best kind of rugby matches that I've watched in a while, but unfortunate way to end for Edinburgh for sure.
That was an incredible game. Like, Edinburgh in that first half, no way did I see them losing the game. They looked as if at times they had another gear to go to if they needed it, but
yeah.
Line speed, physicality, the speed in which they played the game as well, which, you know, 2 years ago you wouldn't have said, but they looked like, for all intents and purposes, not just like a team that was going to go on and win that semi-final, but a team that could easily go on and win the final as well.
Yeah, I thought the versatility in their attack as well, you know, they looked like they could score from anywhere. The way they were playing, and like you say, they had so much momentum, physicality, everything going in the first half. It was probably not capitalising on that pressure in the first half, which has killed them off at the end.
They could have been further ahead, but then probably you would have, if you were Edinburgh, certainly before the game, you would have taken that at half time, like the way, just because of the way they controlled the game. But then second, I mean, you've got to credit Ulster, and especially Ulster's bench, for the way that they came on and started dictating the game far more than Edinburgh could in the second half.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, the nerve in the last 5 minutes to get the score and then to slot the penalty right at the death shows a lot of character, especially as probably not the first choice kicker as well, as we were chatting about earlier. So yeah, fair play to Ulster, and it'll make for a good final, I reckon.
What about now, it's never down to one individual, but you could see in Williams's face, like, he knew instantly, and you could see the other boys going up and tapping in the back, and it was one of those ones, he was probably going with all the right intent, but
yeah.
You ever been in that position where you felt like the weight of the world on your shoulders?
I can't say that I have, I don't think, in a situation like that. But you just feel for him as a player, don't you?
I think there should be a closer. Once pulled our mall down, we were playing Bath down there in Europe, and we were doing all right. We were close to qualifying if we'd won the game, but we didn't quite scrape it. And I pulled them all down, and it was a penalty try and a yellow card.
Oh.
And I remember being in a huddle, and it was quite close to when I was finishing as well, so there wasn't going to be that many more chances in Europe. And yeah, I felt completely responsible for that one. But like, whenever it's anybody else, the first thing you say to them is it's never down to that one individual or that one moment in the game. There was other moments in the game that Edinburgh probably could have and should have taken more points, and probably opportunities to stop, penalty count-wise, especially in the second half, to stop Ulster getting on top.
Yeah, I think that is something that did creep in the second half, was just a bit of discipline falling away potentially as tiredness came in, and like you say, potentially the Ulster bench actually outperforming the Edinburgh one and put more pressure on them. But yeah, you feel for him because, like you say, there was mistakes elsewhere in the second half. It's just right at the crunch when it probably mattered most to put that one in, was is really unfortunate, but it happens, isn't it?
Mossy, great to have you there. I know it's a long way to your front door. Rach and I have already started. Instead of us summing up what we've already said, what did you make of the game? You're a lot closer, and then Rach and I can decipher whether we know anything about
rugby. He can decide whether I'm right or not. listen, I thought it was a really good game. I thought it was a great game of rugby. You know, take the result out of it initially. I thought since the kind of return of rugby, really, it was one of the best games I've seen. Yes, there were mistakes. Yes, there was elements that were quite, you know, scrappy and poor. But in terms of entertainment, in terms of the semi-final, I thought it was a really good game of rugby. Much better than the one the night before, the Leinster versus Munster, I thought. So first things first, really good. Great to see the speed and the physicality early on was excellent. It was a proper semi-final. And I couldn't believe, A, it was half-time because it seemed to go in a flash, and B, it was only 5-0 at half-time because it was such an enjoyable game of rugby. Where the negative comes in is obviously the result from an Edinburgh perspective. And it reminded me in some ways of the Scotland-England game at Twickenham a couple of years ago, where one team, when they get momentum, it's really hard to wrestle that back. Ulster didn't have to make many decisions because it was the last 25 minutes of their season. They hadn't won in 2 weeks. There was next to no pressure on them. They were underdogs. They had to go after the game. And they made some bold decisions at half-time regarding individuals. And then the bench came on, I thought made a real big difference. But there wasn't any dubiety about what they were trying to do. It was just right, here goes. Caution to the wind in many ways. Bring the attitude, have the physicality and play. And they had the skill and the execution to do it. So I thought it was easier in some ways for them. And they got the momentum. But where Edinburgh let themselves down was the discipline. The penalties that they gave away allowed Ulster to build on that momentum and keep control of the game. So Edinburgh missed maybe one or two opportunities to dictate the tempo in the second half. But other than that, I thought Ulster completely dictated what was going on. And Al, you'll know, like, to concede two maul tries will hurt because they were both, you know, quite similar. And it's someone that's been really strong from Edinburgh's point of view. So whether it was a technical change or Dan and Roddy had a bit of inside info having their involvement over here, I don't know. But that'll frustrate them. But credit to Ulster, sorry, for having the guts to keep going, having the execution, the skill execution to keep going well, and the discipline to knock over a couple of kicks later on.
No, you mentioned the mauls, and it wasn't something we touched on, but it's an area of expertise from Dan McFarlane. He all of a sudden, for the first time, or one of the first times, made it very technical for each of the players, and you could see the improvement from a Glasgow point of view and a Scotland point of view when Dan took over that area. So he would have done an awful lot of work, but in saying that, you're dead right. Like, firstly, the penalties conceded to give them the opportunity to go to the corner. Rachel and I had already touched on the fact that disappointed in the second half. It was a bit of a turning point. They were under more pressure, but a turning point for Edinburgh. But then not to defend those mauls, which is, you know, you would put as a strength of Edinburgh. It's like,
well, yeah,
their ability to disrupt opposition set piece is something that they've worked really hard on. So, yeah, clearly not the way they would want to lose the game. But going back to half time, Aussie, what, like, only 5-0, but the way the game had gone, are you disappointed or are you happy enough you're going in with that 5-0 because you know the momentum's with you? You're not, like that England game you mentioned, you're not far enough ahead, or behind for it to have a massive impact on what's been said, but it was your momentum. So where would your head have been if you were in Edinburgh camp at half time?
I felt there as if there was one or two chances just before half time, and Edinburgh actually got a penalty in red time, kicked to the corner, and I thought if you can score here, it's going to be a massive statement. They weren't able to do that. So I thought 5-0 probably wasn't a true enough representation of how they hadn't been dominant in the first half because Ulster came and played and they did a lot of good stuff as well. But I think he felt as if Edinburgh were 5 points better, or more than 5 points better than Ulster on the night. So I wouldn't have imagined Ulster would have been panicking. I think their mindset would have been, we're only 5-0 down, and Edinburgh have had the better of the half, really, considering they scored reasonably early. I think it was at 10 minutes where Ramble scored his try. And the game fluctuated back and forward a wee bit. But yeah, I felt Ulster would be happy it was only 5. I think Edinburgh would be disappointed it wasn't 5. But then that turned on its head within 2 or 3 minutes of the second half when Darcy's try was quite quick after half time. So there's your point where you're 12-0 up, but Ulster had already made some of the changes that were pivotal. They made them at half time even when they were only 5 points back.
Players for Edinburgh that stood out for you, I thought Darcy, you were just speaking about him scoring a try, I thought he was pretty electric, looking to get involved both in attack and defence.
Yeah, no, he always does. There was one attacking high ball he took out of, I think it was Billy Burns' hands at the quite early on in the game. Unbelievable piece of skill, like, to get up and win it. And he's always busy, he's always, you know, applies himself. He's a favourite. I mean, he's a guy you just love to watch. As a guy, you feel proud to watch because he's that brave and he's that desperate and he's that skillful. Duhan van der Merwe's first half was ridiculous in terms of statistics for players beaten and impact. It was good. Hamish would have been right up there for man of the match, as always.
100%.
I thought Ben Toulis' first game back for so long. and he managed about 60 minutes or so. But line-out wise, it was really, really impressive and carrying. So, I mean, that's the thing. There wasn't really bad performances. There were key moments that swung against Edinburgh when the kind of ultimately the pressure was really on against a team that was gaining momentum. So it's frustrating really for them, but they do have another opportunity in a fortnight to play knockout rugby again, the quarter final of the Challenge Cup in Europe away in Bordeaux. So you can't let Saturday's game go to waste in terms of what you need to learn from it. But there wasn't a lot in it. But credit to Ulster, they were up against it and they delivered and they'll go to the final next week.
Yeah, I mean, undoubtedly credit to Ulster, especially for that second half performance. I was sent to reach. I didn't, up until I kind of edgy last 10 minutes, at no point did I expect Edinburgh to lose that game because of the way they'd started. And I always felt as if there was, when they needed it, a wee bit more. But then they just got shell-shocked, or they allowed Ulster to take control of the game in the last 20 minutes or so.
Well, what I said earlier, it maybe sounds pretty strange or even disrespectful, whereas the decisions that Ulster have to make in the game, and I don't mean decisions to whether to pass or kick, it's just instinctive decisions on how the game's going, are easier because there is only one. You can only go for it at that situation 20 minutes before the end of your season against a team that's in form, that hasn't lost at home all year. You've lost your last two games. You're away from home. You're already, you know, going to your bench. You've lost one or two key players and injuries over the few weeks. Like, it's actually, you still have to execute and you still have to carry out, but there isn't that, is it the right time to push ahead or is it the right time to play safe? Should we speed up the tempo or should we try and put the foot on top of the ball? Like, it's just all out, go for it, which is, gives a real clarity when you're on the field. So almost like a bad decision won't be scrutinised because you're desperate. Whereas I think Edinburgh, because I thought what was really impressive when the Ulster scored the first try and go back to 12-7, I think, Edinburgh immediately scored again. Christine scored a really good try, Hamish involved, some good offload and some really good attack. Instantly brought a tempo to the game from the kickoff. And I thought, right, that's underlined Edinburgh again, that they've got it. But then they never got back into the game after that.
Yeah.
So it's not easy what Ulster done, don't get me wrong. It's far from easy against a team that's got the best defensive record in the league. But the mindset's quite easier, I think, than some of the pressure that would be on Edinburgh, thinking actually maybe half a team are thinking, right, we've got to get caught up in the speed of this game and keep going. Maybe one or two are thinking, well, hold the bus. We're ahead here. We're pulling away every time they score. We're at home. You know, our set piece is going really well. But it just comes down to two or three moments, I suppose.
I think as well, when the score is that low, you know, it just takes one moment of brilliance and then you're back in it. And I think, you know, the try that Ulster winger scored where he literally created space out of nowhere and got on the inside of Hamish Watson, that was probably a big turning point for them because that really kind of swung the momentum back towards them. And that one moment of brilliance where, you know, Edinburgh weren't necessarily on the back foot and then it just automatically puts it really close again. And that's all it takes when the score is that low.
Yeah, you're right. And also, like, they'd had two or three attacks like that already in the game, in the first half and in the second half, but they hadn't got points for them. So you can see the kind of how much more buoyant Ulster were when they actually got reward for their good play. The reward, the good play in the first half didn't come because Edinburgh's defence was excellent. They won crucial turnovers near the own line. But that one, you could just see actually, we've gotten the edge of a narrow kick chase, really. You're right, Rachel. The reason he got it was that was the moment that gave Ulster the belief that kind of changed the game in some ways. He had other brilliant moments as well, but that was the kind of, when somebody needed to do it, that kind of broke the ice from Ulster's perspective.
Two other massive moments, Mossy. Madigan's kicks at the end. So, you know, tough kicks.
Yeah. Like, it's...
Before you talk about the kicks himself, but would you fancy those kicks? Do you wait in a game thinking, you know, I reckon I'm in the zone, I want one tonight, or is it hard for him coming off the bench?
I think the first part of that question, you always want to kick. You want to be the guy who's kicking the goals because you've got the responsibility of teammates and you take pride in that responsibility and you're like, right, you know, I've been given this responsibility. I'm going to make a good job of it. You know what I mean? So, and but the way my mind worked when I kicked, and I've said this before, you almost take the context out of the kick and just treat it as an individual, which is hard to do when it's 1917 and you've got a conversion to think, all right, you know, have to get this level, or if I miss this, then we have to score again. If I get it, we could go to extra time. That can't come into your head. It's just like, right, what do I have to do in order to kick this and go through your process? And I think he did that well, because bearing in mind that the one of the best kickers in the league, the Golden Boot winner last year, and is such an effective kicker, John Cooney, the scum half who started, he came off at half time. Billy Burns kicked an important conversion, and then he was replaced by Ian Madigan. So Ian Madigan is effectively the third goal kicker that Ulster have got on the night, but he's got the quality to deliver. The one for the wide route and the right touchline, he knew as soon as it struck his boot it was over. The long one, he had to have a couple of looks at, because I don't think he struck it well enough, don't get me wrong. It was always dead straight, but I think when he looked at it, I wondered if he thought, ah, no, it's just going to just be short. But credit again, step up, bang it in. For something it must be a great feeling to, because you always, I don't know, whenever you move to a new club or join a new team or step up a level, you want the acceptance of your teammates, and you get it in loads of different ways. But a moment like that, for somebody who is quite experienced, who is not restarting his career, but going back to Ireland after not being involved in the international setup for a while, you could see the relief and the pure joy that he got that for the moment in question, but also for the, I suppose, the acceptance. You're at a new team, you feel part of your new squad, and you feel as if you've honoured them and responsibility, delivered your responsibility of kicking a goal.
Interesting what you say about taking each kick in isolation and not letting the external pressures. I mean, externally, for me, the conversion had more pressure on it than the penalty. And that, you know, you miss that and potentially you lose the game. But as a 19-0, you know, it was a difficult kick, and it was a kick with pressure. But it was a kick, it was like, right, well, you know, we've still got more to come, even if I don't get it. If I do get it, then I've taken the team to the final.
Yeah, but you want your opportunity, don't you? You don't want to miss that and think, you know, all that momentum you've built up slides away. And even if you do go to extra time, can Edinburgh get a huge boost from you missing that? You know what I mean? And your team maybe, oh, had the chance to win it, we didn't take it. So I don't think you think like that. I think you think, what do I do to make sure this kick goes over? I do the same as I would do from in front of the post if it was in the first minute. You go through your process and you bang it over. So easy to say, not easy to do.
And is that the same with you, Mossy, on, like, do you now transfer that into other sports as well?
What, from a high level, golf, cricket?
You mentioned golf there. I know we had a business.
I didn't transfer it on Friday, Al.
What happened, Chris?
I had one of the worst rounds of golf I'd ever had in my life, guys. I really enjoyed it, don't get me wrong, but I've played golf pretty much however long since I was a wee boy, and since I've been able to play golf reasonably, I've never played as bad in my life. Do you play golf, Rach?
No, but I do enjoy golf, so I play it randomly, like when I go on holiday and stuff like that, and I can get round.
I couldn't. It's rubbish.
I can get round, but no, it's actually, I really enjoy it. So I think when I have a bit more time in my hands, that is definitely a sport that I will take up properly.
Honestly.
But it's very frustrating.
Admittedly, I hadn't played all year. It's the first time I've played all this sort of stuff. But there was one hole I actually took the ball three times in a row with a five iron. And my five iron's my go-to club. Right, I'm not joking. Usually I can hit the ball right, but my chipping and putting goes. I played off 10 when I was younger. So I played a reasonable amount of golf. But I've never topped three balls in a row with a five iron.
No, that is quite impressive.
And even worse, I feel as if this is a bit of therapy for me. Even worse, the first we started on a par three. And when you're playing with people you don't know, and you're nervous as such, but you're just like, oh, hope I got off to a good start. Par three, perfect. Eight iron, balls teed up. I actually topped the eight iron on a par three. Didn't even get off, like, honestly, didn't even go off the ground. So I blame Al for it biting me for a game of golf when I hadn't played.
Rachel, honestly, afterwards, and it wasn't like it was all taken in good heart, but we were like crying with laughter at some of the stories he was coming out to tell. The only thing I can say to you, Mossy, is that A very wise man once told me that you should take each shot as an individual and not let any of the pressures accumulate onto them. Just see if that helps moving
forward. I did, and I still topped three in a row.
Let's look forward. So Edinburgh unfortunately out of the Pro 14 playoffs, but Europe still to come. I think the players will get a couple of days off and then they'll be straight back in to concentrate in that game against Bordeaux.
You'd think as well, you know, obviously a disappointing ending, but a really good campaign probably put them in a position where they're going into that quarterfinal with a lot of confidence. A number of the players in the Pro 14 Dream Team and a number of players putting in really good performances the last couple of weeks, they really should be going into that with a lot of confidence.
It's funny, isn't it? It seems a long time. I mean, it's one of those situations you see now and again in Europe where you actually, if you reach the knockout stages, you play one of the teams that was in your pool. So Bordeaux were in their pool. Mm. They drew at home, BT Murrayfield. I can't remember off the top of my head if it was 18-0. It was something like that. And it was a really good game. And they lost away in Bordeaux. Now, Bordeaux's squad's changed massively. The high-profile exit, I suppose, is Semi Radradra, probably one of the world's best players at the moment, moving. You know, he was contracted to Bordeaux and then he signed for Bristol. But because we're finishing off last season, he's obviously already moved. So him not playing a positive. But they're a really good side, Bordeaux. I was really impressed that night at BT Murrayfield, just with a number of players, but they're a quality team. And Edinburgh have to go on the road. But as I said before, you have to use Saturday to your advantage. And I think a bit of underdog in them might be a good thing. They know that they can compete with Bordeaux. The French league got up and running at the weekend as well. But yeah, it's a nice one to have for Edinburgh, because if last Saturday was your last experience of the season, effectively, I know the next season's only 3 or 4 weeks away, but it would really hurt. Whereas you can drive that heart of Saturday into a European quarterfinal. A week on Saturday, but they're going to have a lot of quality because Bordeaux are a quality team.
Absolutely. Well, Rach mentioned that some of the quality in that Edinburgh team have made the Guinness Pro 14 Dream Team. Schumann, Lewis said, Big Grant Gill, Chris Balmata, Van der Vogt, Van der Melva and Blair Kinghorn all making that 15, strongest 15 out of the league so far this year, as well as Richard Cockerell picking up the Coach of the Year, voted for by his fellow coaches. So, you know, it shows you not only the talent that we know is in the Edinburgh team, but how it is highly rated around the league as well.
That's a big representation, isn't it? If you think that represents 14 sides and, you know, you've got your coach, and how many was that? Six players. That's a big percentage. And I don't think you could argue with any of them, really. I mean, you think of some of Schumann's games before the break, Bill Mata every week, Blair's been outstanding. Mm. Jacko van der Waal, I'm really happy for him because he's had a really, two seasons, a season and a half, really, really important. You know, there's a lot of pressure on him to deliver and he's been really, really physical as well. So some of the hits he was throwing about in the last 2 or 3 weeks as well and winning ball, I'm pleased because he's worked really hard and it's good to get that representation because there's some quality tens across that league as well. So yeah, it's just bitterly disappointing that they'll not be able to underline their accolades in a final weekend.
Yeah, and even with that list, you could have a number of others in there, but probably one that needs a mention is Van der Merwe, who came away with Players' Player from the tournament as well. And he, especially the last couple of weeks, been absolutely exceptional, creating stuff out of nothing. So very well deserved.
I mean, he's incredible. He really is. Edinburgh have had some mental back to guys like Tim Visser, like try-scoring wingers, mixture of the Darcy Grahams as well. We've got the physicality, got the speed but mixed with the physicality. But he seems to have everything. And he's got the ability to go through people or go around them. And I would imagine that he would have been a reasonable favourite on that list as far as voted for again by his peers, which is a nice one to get. But I would imagine he'd been quite high up there, Mossy.
Oh, yeah. If you ask the opposition who they don't want to play against or who they wouldn't want to mark, he'd be right up there. As you say, and I'm not, I like stats. I get the, you know, I can understand stats. I like sometimes what they show, but sometimes, as we all know, you can make stats show what you want to see. But his stats are utterly ridiculous. They're almost like team stats in terms of he's beaten more defenders than anybody else in the Pro 14. I think by it's something like 18 more than the next person. He's got more clean breaks. Are we up at like 60-odd clean breaks or whatever it is? Again, like 12, 15 more than other people, than the second place person, more meters than anyone else. So not only does he top the stats, he tops them by a long, long way. Try assists, try scored, important try scored for Edinburgh. And his defence has improved this year as well, like in terms of physical player, good tackler. But at times, maybe his defensive positioning over the last couple of seasons would have been where teams would maybe have thought, you know, there's a bit of miles here, but he's been excellent in that regard and improved. So he's he should be proud of that award. He deserves it.
They get him on the ball, or don't they? Like, you know, even the rest of the teammates and the tactics Edinburgh use.
So would I.
I know, but at times you see some of these wingers, and every time they get the ball, like it's an opposition, you're like, oh no. But they only touch the ball, I don't know, a handful of times each half. Whereas he gets on the ball a lot more than some of, hence the reason he's got such great stats as well.
I think he could get in the ball more. I said this, I do, just because he's so effective. And for a couple of reasons, I think Edinburgh also have scored more tries from first phase than any other team in the league. And a lot of that is where he gets involved early in the first phase. Obviously, they've got brilliant attacking strikes, if you think all the players have got, Darcy and Blair and Bill Mata and Doohan and everybody else, Matt Bennett, the guys that they've got good attacking structures from set piece, and a quality set piece that's helped them launch these guys. But I think if he could get his hands in the ball more often, it would be an even bigger an even more impressive thing. But at the same time though, like, he's just numbers are through the roof.
Well, Mossy's also now eligible to play for Scotland. You see him, big future in the Scotland jersey ahead?
I'd have to be considered, wouldn't he? As I say, with the impact he's made and how dangerous he is and the respect he has, it'll be a really good addition if Gregor Townsend and the staff call him up. And let's hope if he is called up, he continues that form and as he already has done, he continues to improve and he can really hit the world stage.
Who do you fancy in the final then? Unfortunately, Edinburgh are not going to be there, but I mean, the Leinster Munster game on Friday night probably didn't tell us very much. It wasn't an overly interesting game, let's say, but I think Ulster have got it in them to turn over Leinster.
I think for me, Leinster are going to go and take it all the way. The way they've played consistently over the whole season, and even though not necessarily the best performance against Munster at the weekend, I do think they probably are the favourites. Then, you know, the nerve that that Ulster showed against Edinburgh, and then the depth that they showed in their squad as well with their bench, you never know. So yeah, hopefully be a good game, but my money's on Leinster.
You can't see past Leinster, can you, really, in terms of in Europe, really? I mean, there's such a strong team, whoever will play. I mean, there's, you know, the depth of the squad's exceptional, but even the players who aren't really seen as being star players played really well. Like Hugo Keenan played in the wing last week, he played the week before. These guys are fighting and getting in a merit, but you know, you got Rob Carney's on the bench. So it's not as if they just go for their star players. Whoever plays at a level, and I think that makes them pretty difficult to beat. I wonder if, and you'd never get the answer to this, but what do you think, Carl? I'll ask you rather, because I don't have a Leinsterman to ask. But would they rather play Ulster in the final than Edinburgh, do you think?
I don't know. I think that, I mean, Ulster was last year, wasn't it, in the European, was it quarter? Semi-final?
Yeah,
it was a one-point game. And ultimately, Ulster could have, should have, would have won that game. So they know each other very well. Everything that makes me look at Ulster a bit deeper, partly what you said, Chris, with the last 25 minutes or so, is that it's very little for Ulster to lose in this game.
Like, yeah,
they can go out in absolute kitchen sink from the first minute.
And Dan will want them to do that, and he's infectious in that way, the way he coaches, the way he kind of delivers and drives. It's a good match, that, in terms of Dan's delivery and what they have to do.
Yeah, I think a lot of people speaking about the bigger picture with Leinster as well, and you know, will they want to give all their top players all the game time? You're talking about potential, what, 6 weeks of, you know, back-to-back fixtures. Well, don't get me wrong, they've got incredible depth, as you've pointed out already. They are the favourites, but I'd like to see Ulster just go out and throw absolutely everything at them. And if it clicks for Ulster, we've already seen they've got the ability to turn anybody over. They've got a strong, strong bench to come off and close out that game as well. So, yeah, I don't know if it's as cut and dry as we might.
Finals never are, really, are they? Or finals rarely are. But I agree with you again, Al, on that point, and that kind of takes us back, and then going back to the other semi-final. But Munster didn't want to, well, obviously wanted to win that game, but it didn't look as if they were prepared to go and win it.
Didn't fire many shots, did they?
Didn't fire a shot in terms of, and yes, they got reasonably close 2 weeks previous with a similar game plan, and you're, say if you're kicking off nine or you're kicking a lot, I think Conor Murray had some like 18 box kicks in the game. You only need the opposition to spill it once in order to, you know, to get your try. I mean, that's how Leinster scored from a kick that I think Conway failed to get, and then they got the field position and scored. But when you're really up against it and it's not worked for 70 minutes or 60 minutes, try something else. Do you know what I mean? Your season's hanging on it. I just felt, and I don't know how bad the conditions were because I said it was quite wet, but I just thought, do you know what? Go down fighting, try something. Mm. And it just frustrated me watching it. Not because I was supporting anybody, but I just thought I would have felt a wee bit frustrated the way I like to used to play. And if you went out a final without really, as you say, firing a shot.
Well, Ulster have lost a good few knockout games over the last few years, and you wonder whether they've learnt a bit from that. The fact, exactly like they did against Edinburgh, it's like, well, this isn't working. Let's rip up the game plan and try and get the win. Because ultimately, if we don't change something, we're out. We're not building for anything or moving towards anything. And that's the attitude that Dan's got to put into the boys.
And that's what. And Dan said something like that at the end of the game. He said, listen, we didn't try any harder in the second half. We were better. So the effort, even his underlining the effort that was there in the first half, but it's just the execution was better. He says, so it's not as if we didn't try or we could have tried harder. The effort remained. It was just the execution and it was better.
It's a slight mind shift though, isn't it? Your mindset going out into a game not to lose it or to do whatever it takes to win it. And you might lose them sometimes when you go out and try and do everything you can to win the game. But at least you've gone out with that mindset. I felt that game on Friday night, it was two teams who were just about doing enough and controlling the game, but neither of which, and we should have been Munster because they were behind in the scoreboard and probably underdogs into the game, that went out and just said, you know what, let's just go out and throw everything at it.
Do you think that is harder to do nowadays? Well, we'll ask Rachel, she's still playing. Like, I think maybe when we played, Al, it was easier for players to change something or not go off script. You would never go off script. Well, sometimes you would, but you would always try and stick to what you're trying to do. But you know what I mean? I think everything is really quite well structured and planned now. Is it harder for players to react in the field and change the game plan or change the style? Or does that just allow you maybe to be isolated as an individual?
I think it is a little bit sometimes. I think, you know, we are so prescribed a lot of the time now in the game plan and what we're trying to do. And it's almost that fear of being that person that has, you know, those moments of brilliance which actually create something. Mm-hmm. But the times where it doesn't and you end up getting pelters in team meetings. So I think it's somehow in that balance between, you know, obviously having a game plan, having that structure, but having a certain degree of license for certain players in particular to go off script when it's on. And I think we do lack that a little bit in the modern game, particularly in the women's game as well. It's something that we definitely need to get better at as Scotland women to capitalise on those times as well. But yeah, I think you could be right there that there is more opportunity. I know speaking to my dad, but when he played, he's always saying, you know, it's not the same and all of this, because, you know, it used to be a lot more open and playing what you see. And I think,
it's,
you know,
some more time to win Mossy played.
Yeah.
your dad's a bit older than I am, Rachel.
But yeah, no, I think there's definitely a license for it.
I think the key message is really along with what you said there is, if you are going to go take players with you, like, you can't win a game on your own. You can't do it. You might hope or think you can. And the harder everybody tries individually, the harder it makes it collectively, because you're all doing different things. So it might effectively be something as simple as a call, that if somebody calls it and you agree, it say, right, actually, it means, you know, we're now going to, you know, allow an offload that maybe isn't 100% on. Because usually you go into a game, there's an offload's an example, you're going, unless you see the offload, win the contact, see the offload, got your hands free, and it's a kind of 90%-ish, you don't give it. But it might be a call in the game where you do need to chase it, that you can say across the board, you know what, right, offloads are on, right?
Yeah.
If you feel you're going to go for it, let's go for it. If you're a support player, work hard to get in behind and expect it. If you are a ball carrier, fight to get space. And just even something like that is a team call that can change the tempo of the game. Maybe that, and of course teams will do that. Of course they will. Maybe Munster tried that and Leinster were just too good at the weekend. But it would be, it'd be good to know that you could just, I don't know, have something to go to that can change the flow of the game.
Yeah,
I think it's fascinating. I think the position that stands out for me, because actually a lot of the time it comes down to the skill set and the mindset of your players on the bench. And I think when you look at nines in particular, the ability to have two different styles in a team, you know, the controlling, and I'm stereotyping here, but the controlling nine who can do whatever is needed to keep that structure, and the other nine will come in and not just raise the tempo, but by raising the tempo, it takes everybody else into that different mindset. There's an attacking mindset. The other position for me is a number eight or a ball carrier. Like Josh Strauss was the guy. Like if we were in the game in the last 20 minutes, it's like, Josh, you need to get your hands on the ball, because he had the ability to bust up. You know, talked about Vander Merwe for Edinburgh, the guy that could change something. Now, you don't have 15 of them. Guys and girls, you don't have 15 of them in the park. There are people on that park that you know can be catalysts for something. And at that key points in the game, they need to be as involved. And it might be, to your point, Mosh, it might be a call, but it might be a specific move. Mm-hmm. It might be that, you know, you take your number eight out of the scrum and you stand them at 12, and then you just hit them straight, something along those lines. It just changes it up a wee bit. But
yeah,
I think in knockout rugby, it's even more important. It's having that plan B, or the ability to wrap up all the plans and say, right, let's just go out and play rugby. Yeah.
Remember when the England 2003 World Cup winning team, they had a call on defence. It was a similar thing that they could go to if they felt under pressure. Now, don't get me wrong, everything outside the time where they called this call had to be precise, had to be physical, had to be aggressive. But they actually had an overriding call that if they felt they were on top of the team, they could really go after them defensively, or if they felt vulnerable and needed extra motivation, they would have a call. And it would just mean for the next 10 minutes, we hit everything. Like we get off the line. It's almost a marked increase in intensity. So you could have it in defence and attack. And as I said before, I know the coaches work through these principles and structures, but it's good to know that there's still room for that individual element or that element of surprise, and the game isn't overly structured, that you fall into a momentum or you fall into a rhythm that it's very difficult to change.
Maybe pushy shovey fight sometimes helps to galvanise.
Oh, aye, here we go. For the second drop, a wee clip around here, then reverse backwards.
Thanks again for listening to the official Scottish Rugby podcast. Next week we'll be back, and looking forward to Edinburgh's quarter final away against Bordeaux.